members of parliament in the NCOP as well as the department, specifically the deputy minister for COGTA, Honorable Obed Bapela. You are all heartily welcome to this meeting. I'm just advised that the minister will join the meeting late because she missed a flight to Cape Town. And you would understand that there is a lot of work that she's doing. But luckily I met her last week. We had a discussion about what is it that we need to do to consolidate our work and ensure that we work for the common good of this department to enable it to accomplish its own objectives. But nevertheless, because the Deputy Minister is here, Honorable Bapela, is quite competent and ready to politically oversee everything in respect of the department itself. This is the first meeting of our committee with the department, in which the department is going to present to us the annual performance plan as well as its budget. And it is going to do three presentations in this meeting. It will be a presentation that covers the area of cooperative governance. It will be an area that covers MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, as well as the traditional affairs. We're meeting at a time when this department, as important as it is, as important as the challenges that it is facing are at the moment, it must work towards ensuring that we succeed in stabilizing a very, very worsening situation at municipal level. A situation that requires a serious paradigm shift, that requires a serious intervention, because the municipalities are the weakest in terms of our project of state transformation. And we need to ensure that our municipalities are healthy, are viable, are developmental, and therefore help us as a country to fulfill our own developmental objectives. We need to talk about the situation that is confronting, especially our municipalities, and what solutions are necessary to ameliorate the situation that is confronting us. As I indicated, one of the biggest problems is infrastructure, and MISA is here as well to deal with that particular problem. We need to know what kind of support are they giving to municipalities. And as I indicated, to also deal with issues on traditional affairs. What are the challenges? What are the issues? What are the areas which require the intervention? What is the role of the National House of Traditional Leadership in normalizing the whole situation? With those words, as I indicated, you are welcome. There is a lot that is before us to deal with. I'm going to start because this is the first meeting where we're meeting the department. I'm going to request each one of us, members of parliament, stand up, introduce ourselves, and thereafter will be in the hands of Honorable Bapela, who is going to introduce himself as well as the members of the team from the department. My name is China Dodovu. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee. Can we start here?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is George Michalakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free State.
Good morning, Chairperson. Delegates, I'm Karin Sipper. I'm a permanent delegate from the Northwest Province.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tendile Mola, a member of the committee. I'm from Mpumalanga province. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, everyone. My name is Sam Zandamela, permanent delegate from Mpumalanga.
Morning, Chair. Zubiswa Nita from ETNT, member of the committee.
Thanks, Chairperson. My name is Sheda Sheikh from Limpopo province and a member of the committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Enoch Tetra from KZN, a permanent member of this committee.
Bonolo Bontate, Libiso Raka Kikini, Mutamai, a permanent member of Haute province.
Very much. Before Honorable Wattel, I want most to just introduce the members of the staff within the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Members and Departmental Officials. My name is Moses Manele. I am the Secretary to the committee. Chair, without any waste of time, I will just ask our colleagues to raise their hands. This is the support staff to the committee. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Very much. Over to you,
Robert Vapella. Thank you, Chairperson of the Select Committee. My name is Robert Vapella. I'm the Deputy Minister for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. And with me, with a team from the department, so they will just individually and quickly introduce themselves and their positions.
Excuse me for my ignorance. Chairperson and honorable members, my name is Tozi Faba. I'm the DDG Corporate Services Department of GCOC, and today I'm presenting on behalf of my DG, who unfortunately could not make it today due to serious family matters, and his name is Mr. Dan Mashitisho. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, DM, my colleagues. My name is Ntandazo Vimba. I'm the CEO of NISA.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, Deputy Minister, DG, CEO. My name is Mapaka Tau. I'm head of the National Disaster Management Center. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, DM and DG. I'm Dorothy Burger Schneider, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Mandy Jacobs. I'm the Executive Office of ECOC and
Governance. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Temba Fosse. I'm the DDG responsible for local government support and interventions management.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Shoki Mukhanadi from the Department of Traditional Affairs.
DDG. Your rank is DDG.
My name is Shoki Mukhaladi, but the title
your designation?
Deputy Director General for Research, Policy and Legislation in the Department of Traditional Affairs.
Okay.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Thandaza Shandu, DDG Institutional Support and Coordination, Department of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. My name is Chobani, my surname is Mateza. I'm the Parliamentarizing Officer in the Ministry of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, colleagues. My name is Mamukwele Mifolo. I'm the Parliamentary Officer.
Okay. My name is Sisson Lobo. I'm the executive head of office for Deputy Minister Papela.
Clifford Mahajani, working for the Department of Traditional Affairs, Cabinet, Parliament and Cabinet Support. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Nonki Molefe, working for DCOC, DDG Corporate Services.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone? Yes.
Good morning, Jacob Mashishi, Chief Director of DG Traditional Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Abraham Sitore. I'm the Secretary to the National House of Traditional Leaders in the Department of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Matsubane Apani, CFO, Department of Traditional Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Mona Pule George. I'm the National Program Manager for CWP, Community Wealth Fraud.
Good morning, my honorable members and deputy minister. My name is Lekhadi Malisu. I'm responsible for communications in COCTA.
Good morning, honorable members, deputy minister and colleagues. My name is Victor Matada. I'm responsible for strategic planning in NISA.
Good morning, colleagues. I'm Ruben Ramaila from Corporate Planning, Department of Cooperative Governance.
Honorable Chair, last but not least, my name is Longi Mchali. I'm the spokesperson for the ministry, and I think I'm the last, right?
It doesn't matter, it's okay. He won. Okay. Now, thank you very much. What we are going to do, I propose, honorable members, that we take the three presentations. And please note everything. We will allow each presentation to take about 30 minutes each. Take notes, record properly, so that we allow ourselves more time to engage with the presentation. Who's ready? Can we start cooperative governance? Or you want to? Yes.
Usually you start with the minister.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ministry in the department.
Yes, okay.
No, thank you very much.
Point of order, Mulla Sulu. Nna ke ba le bothata no yana.
Yes.
Gobane puo buiwa mo ke Sekgowa. Ke bua le mafa a mantsho. Ga ke anda a ke tlhaloganyo gotlhegotlhe. Le one kopi ke ifile mo pele a kae ke ya Sekgowa. Go ka seka ga nna le motho o ka nranolela. Bua Setswana nna. Ba tla bua ke le utlwe gore le Batswana ba ne ke le shoko ba tla bua Setswana mona ba ntse ba bua Sekgowa. Sone ke kopa gore a go be le sengwe se e le gore go nne le motho o ka ntlhalosetsang gore go buiwa kae kgotsa go utlwisisa sepe.
I'm going to request gore go be the way that we help honorable Motsamai. It's not bad. I know that it's not so bad in English. It's good, actually. But we need to find a way that we help him, because it is within his right to be assisted in that instance. But in the meantime, let us proceed with the meeting whilst we try to facilitate a way that we can enable him to follow and be part of this particular meeting quite properly, without wasting any time and delay in the meeting. I suggest that we must attend to this problem quite immediately. Over to you in the meantime, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Select Committee, Tamsang China Dodobu, honorable members of the Select Committee. Let me also apologize for Deputy Minister Park Shao, who has traveled to the UN, the summit that of local governments that is taking place there. So he is representing the country. And then that is why he is not here. Otherwise, most of the time, we are all together when we appear before portfolio committees or select committees. The minister would have loved to do the following remarks on our behalf, so I'll just read out as, and not undermining languages, because all languages in South Africa, 11 of them, are important and are equal. But for the purposes of common understanding, if I can speak in my speedy now, I know that others will not hear me. And then to be accommodative already, I heard Honorable Mthethwa saying, if I speak speedy, you will not hear me. And then to be accommodative, then we'll use English. But usually Parliament has such facilities where there's simultaneous interpretations. But I hope Honorable Mthethwa's issue is a valid one and should be followed and ensure therefore that we do accommodate everybody as South Africans. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity provided to interact with the Select Committee today on the revised 2015-2020 strategic plan and on the 2019-2020 annual performance plan of the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs. For this purpose, the Director Generals of the Department of Corporate Governance and the Department of Traditional Affairs will present the details of the respective plans and the programs through which the plans will be delivered, including MISA, which is a Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, not agency. Okay. I want to start by going back to the principles of cooperative government and the mandate of COGTA, which it derives from Chapter 3 of the Constitution. COGTA straddles and manages cooperative government between the three spheres of government that are distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. So no one is independent. So you are distinctive because of the specific mandate, you are interdependent on each other, and you are interrelated. The Constitution states that all spheres of government and all organs of state within each other must, one, preserve the peace, the national unity, and the indivisibility of the Republic. Two, secure the well-being of the people of the Republic. Three, provide effective, transparent, accountable, and coherent government for the Republic as a whole. Four, to be loyal to the Constitution, the Republic, and its people. Five, respect the Constitution status, the institutions that are there, powers and functions of government in other spheres. Six, not assume any power or function except those conferred on them in terms of the Constitution. Seven, exercise their powers and perform their functions in a manner that does not encroach on the geographical, functional, or institutional integrity of government in other spheres. And eight, cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith by fostering friendly relations. And in this case, I think you know of the existence of the Intergovernment Relations Act, the IGR, and then assisting and supporting one another, informing one another of and consulting one another on matters of common interest, coordinating their actions and legislative with one another, adhering to agreed procedures and avoiding legal proceedings against one another. Chair, as you continue with your work as oversight on the executive, you will then realize that there will be certain areas somewhere in the country where a municipality is taking a province to court. And I think as the honorable member comes from the Northwest, you know about the incident of Garisano Molopo, who have taken the province of the Northwest, to court for the decision of a 1391B on the municipality itself. And yet the constituencies find mechanisms and ways to cooperate, but obviously, and avoid legal proceedings against one another. So those are what the constituencies to all of us we must do. While the constitution gives each other sphere distinctive powers and functions, they all form part of a single coherent system of government for the country. Cooperative government is premised on the three spheres having authority of service delivery functions. Within this framework, national government has a constitutional mandate to monitor and work with provincial government to assist and support local government. But it is important to remember that all this must happen within the limits of the Constitution and national government's regulatory authority. The Constitution empowers the provinces to have direct oversight over municipalities. The ANCOP is the closest house of parliament to the provincial and local government, as its role is to ensure provincial and local government representation in parliament. And as members were introducing themselves, they are representing permanent delegates from the various provinces that are here. The local sphere of government is arguably the most important to the people because it is the level they get to experience on a daily basis. They make judgments on the performance of government based on their experience at the local government. Every area of human endeavor happens in local government, including every vote that brought all of us here to Parliament, it is cast there. In essence, there's no government without local government. Because if you want to build a school, you can't build it on air. There's nothing called national or provincial. You have to look for a site, land in the municipality. That's why you build a school, the hospital, the road, or everything. So that's how local government is important to all of us. The Constitution compels municipalities to strive within their financial and administrative capacity to achieve the following objectives. One, to provide democratic and accountable government for local communities as representatives of those communities. Two, to ensure provision of services to communities in a sustainable manner. But I think all of you know the challenges that are there on the ground to crisscross the country. During the elections campaign, you have seen for yourselves, people have spoken to you. You will then be able to then develop an oversight program that says, what is it that you are going to be doing to ensure that the communities are serviced in a sustainable manner and they do get services. Three, to promote social and economic development, because every economic activity and every social activity takes place in a municipality. The big companies that have established their big factories or their mines are there in the local government space. So if the local government does not provide water to a factory, it means that factory will then decide to migrate to where it will get better services, and jobs will then be lost in those particular areas. So therefore, at all given times, municipalities must be fully servicing to ensure that local economy thrives in the level of the municipality so that people can work, play, and stay in a local municipality without avoiding long distances and trips that they had to incur and spending money on transport. Four, to promote safe and healthy environment, as you know that the cities must be clean, streets must be clean, the grass must be cut, the lights must be on. But you do feel happy that you yourself, honorable members, when you go home, you switch on the lights, they're on. You open the tap, the water comes out. But there are certain communities, unfortunately, that when you go there, there might be a tap, but there may not be water coming out of that tap. So we still have people who are experiencing that throughout the country. So if those things are still happening, it means you have not yet arrived. We have to ensure, therefore, that the services reach to all the people who are enriched. Fifthly, to encourage the involvement of communities and community organizations in matters of local government. That is participatory democracy. First, we talk of representative democracy, which is the people that get elected into positions. However, once you are elected, that's not the end. You must ensure that there's participation of the people at that levels of participation. Hence, we have what we call the ward committees and so forth. COGTA is still focused on collaborating with provincial government to carry through the mandate as set out in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, which is in the main to make use of legislative and other measures. Two, one, support and strengthen the capacity of municipality to manage their own affairs. Two, to strengthen the capacity of municipality to exercise their powers and to perform their functions. You will be hearing more from us around the Back to Basics program. It has five pillars. We'll be coming to explain them at some point to then begin to engage with you around how we have implemented, where it's winning, where it's not happening, why is it happening, and why it's not happening across. Because if we can have that program fully implemented, we will have resolved quite a number of challenges that municipalities have. Today we will present the transitional strategy plans which outline mainly what the department seeks to achieve in the remainder of the current 2014-2019, which is the medium-term strategic framework period, which is the strategic plan of the fifth administration. We will highlight some of the priorities we will be engaging on the sixth administration, but the strategic plan for the sixth administration is still work in progress. What's happening here, Chair, is that we are coming in while the fifth administration is coming to an end. However, the new administration is also beginning. And what then usually happens is that once whoever wins the elections, they have a manifesto, and that manifesto then informs the program of the sixth administration or whoever comes into power. So currently, because of the work that we have to do, hit the ground running, we are now reworking the medium strategic framework that will then, which has been introduced. However, they will then be updating it to then include issues that are now going to be the priorities of the sixth administration. Once that work has happened, we'll then come back to the portfolio committees to present. During this new MTSF, we'll also work towards clarifying and strengthening the involvement of traditional leaders in socio-economic development and government program through structured engagement between government and the institution of traditional leaders. This will help us build social cohesion through strong partnerships between government and traditional leaders across all spheres of government. Working closer with traditional leaders will enhance the participation of this institution in the implementation of the country's strategic development goals, particularly in traditional and rural communities. As you know, that the rural economy still has to be grown. We'll have to focus our attention on it. And traditional leaders have land and have people. What is it that we're going to do with these strategic assets, land and the people? What they don't have is capital and machinery to turn land into productive use so that we could then end hunger, reduce poverty, unemployment, and inequality. So we then have to find a model and a formula that can then begin to then take advantage of the land that is available there. Majority of the land in South Africa is in private hands, and Parliament is engaged on the processes of land expropriation without compensation, Section 525 amendments that is going to be taking place, which will help us in also looking at the productive strategic land available in the rural areas for economic growth so that indeed poverty also there is attended to and dealt with, taking advantage of the traditional land or communal land.
Point of order, Nirula Spino. Ke sentse ke ole jese di diraga mona le botlhoko and-e ke leba motho le gore a ka kgona gore a bantlhalosetsa gore go bua ka eng a botlwedise a botlwedise a ona
a kere ke ile ka rula gore re fumane motho o tla kgona go go thusa
so ga ka leitsiana ke bona go sena motho o ne mo romile ke o mo pelaka
o entse point of order utlwile wa re ke ne ke kopa o time maike wa gago sa re tle re kgone go buisana gantle nna go utlwale ka pula ke re ke notile request ya gago and-e ke dumetse gore o tlameile wa thusega le deputy minister o tlhola ko wena wa bua re di important because re na le dilanguage tse 11 and-e mongwe le mongwe o na le right ya gore a bue ka language ya e batlang re amogela kgang
jwale ke qeta ho thola report e reng Parliament understaffed, which is a very serious problem. If one or another Parliament understaffed, I have no doubt. But by the way, can the National Assembly occupy more than we do? So we have to have to solve it. I'm sure that we want it. There could be other people who need that kind of support. That I agree for it. But I'm not sure why we want it. Now, but then, to put it in words, we have to go to the world. And the matter of the offender is in this is an theory. And then, we have to have our own contributions. I agree with it. But I'm not sure that this is made. After this meeting, it is after meeting. Re busa meeting ko moa because the truth ke gore re tshwanetse re a tswelela pele re attend to the issues, the business of the day. If you know gore we are not going to solve this problem hantle, after this meeting I will take it upon myself to ensure gore this situation doesn't happen because everybody is entitled to speak ka language ya batla go bua ka yone le o understand the issues ka tsela e leng gore ya utlwalela. But in the meantime, we can operate. There is a disrupt meeting. There is a boost meeting. Come around that tomorrow. Yes.
Yeah, but that's why I go there. No, yeah, na. Because I'm going to go to Monaco. I get to see that Swans. Because I know I'm going to do it. And maybe what they are represent about 12 and 7 million. By no matter what, you can make a reply. By series. So, what is the name of the people?
We are attending to your problem. And for me, it's a very serious matter. Not for my part, I took it for granted for a follower because on so attend all these other meetings, I think about 4 to 5 meetings, and they're ready together also not this problem. If it arises today, we've got to attend to it. And as I indicated, can we move on come meeting, we are still busy sorting out this particular problem. We will solve it. And then we apologize for that. Thank you very much. Can you go on?
No. Thank you, Chairperson. We are also talking through this system so that it's recorded, it's unanswered, so that it can be available to members. But also the copy of the speech will be distributed also so that members can even take away with it. So that as you go and do your execution of the duty on oversight, you could have. We are in a transitional phase of the administration of government where we are reflecting on the achievement of our efforts over the past 5 years. Looking back after 25 years of democracy and 19 years of democratic local government, a lot still needs to be done to ensure that we address the triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. The department has developed a number of strategic packages geared at addressing them. The ideal system of local government that cooperates at all three spheres will be fundamental to bringing the triple, to bridging the triple challenge. Our government introduced the Community Works Program in 2008 as one of the measures to provide skills and meaningful employment for the unemployed of our people. I think in the presentation we'll hear more about it. Yesterday, the minister visited the CWP site in KwaZulu-Natal as part of an assessment of the effectiveness of the program. It was confirmed that there are challenges with its delivery model and in its current form. CWP is not meeting its objectives of developing skills and creating meaningful employment. We'll urgently review the delivery model of the Community Works Program. We have to ensure that the program achieves its objectives of providing employment towards projects that develop and benefit their communities. We'll also urgently address the issues raised by the Auditor General on the management of the CWP program, which are the source of the department getting a disclaimer in its audit outcome for 2017-2018. I think this issue is going to be one of the biggest issues through particularly this financial year going forward, unless we do something, we correct the situation across all municipalities, not only the department that got the disclaimer as a result of this program. The department is also positioning itself to respond to the challenges that are facing local government, mainly on the priority of delivering basic services at an acceptable standard. In the main, the key challenges that are still evident in our municipalities revolve around poor governance and financial management systems, which hamper the functionality of our local government sphere. And the chair, you alluded to it in your opening remarks that your task is then to see how we can help using our oversight mechanisms to ensure that it is functional, proper, and it's able to deliver services to local government. These challenges are being felt at the community level, where we are seeing growing levels of dissatisfaction expressed in a form of service delivery protest. We are committed to steering and enhancing a system of cooperative governance, which we envisage is feasible through the implementation of an integrated relation framework that works for better service delivery, which will benefit our communities and improve the lives of all South Africans. Our response to these challenges has been packaged in a set of priorities that we believe will be fundamental to our effective turnaround of the local government by building their capacity to improve A, governance structures, B, financial management, C, supply chain management systems. These priorities summarize as follows. 1, institutional development, governance, and citizens' engagement. 2, institutional sustainability, policy review on the whole-to-whole local government, their powers and functions, and the funding model of local government. Currently, as you know from the equitable share, local government only gets 9%. Just a slight improvement from 7% to 9%, and yet much is expected of them to service and then deliver services. 3, water and bulk infrastructure and maintenance thereof. Quite a lot of it is there. It's not maintained, or we still lack of it. We need them to cover the entire country. 4, service delivery and job creation, which jobs is what the people want and need. 5, strengthen cooperative governance, the IGR, lateral and vertical integration. 6, disaster risk reduction and management. As you all know, that now we live in a world that is going through what we call climate change, and there's quite a lot of things that are now beginning to happen, even in our country, or next door in Mozambique and Zimbabwe, the cyclone that had hit them. So we need to be ready as a country for any major disaster elements, and then our risk and mitigating systems ought to be activated, and investment in that, in this area, to be prepared. KZN, I think, was one classical example of the floods that saw houses just drifting into the river as they are, and the loss of lives that has happened. Mm-hmm. So the country ought to be disaster ready in terms of its reduction strategies and so forth. Integrated planning for special transformation and inclusive economic development is one of the key elements to deal with the apartheid special legacies that are there, so that we are able to build a South Africa that is at peace with itself, well-planned, coordinated, rural and urban, coexisting with that particular strength of a special settlement. Strengthening the institution, particularly the Department of Cooperative Governance and such in particular. We'll be implementing these priorities in the short term during the 2019-20 financial year, but also this will form the basis of the new 2019-2024 strategy plan for the department, which we are hoping to resubmit in the near future. We'll strengthen the municipal infrastructure support agent to also help build the human and funding capacity of municipalities. As I go towards the conclusion, Chair, as part of that capacity building, NISA must train young people to provide and maintain municipal infrastructure. We are in a discussion with the School of Government to identify the areas where municipalities are failing and to develop relevant training programs that are specific to local government. These net objectives of these initiatives and programs that makes our department's APP is to improve our own competitiveness to ensure that we can build the requisite capacity for municipalities to deliver on their constitutional mandate. Honorable Chairperson, we hope that we'll work with this committee and the NCOP to develop an effective early warning system that will allow us to detect red flags and act through cooperative governance mechanism to provide Section 154 and only use Section 100 and 139 as the last resort, not the way things are happening. We tend to go to 139 and 100 without fuller utilization of 154. In instances where we have applied the mechanism of last resort, we have to ensure that these interventions are sustainable by always including capacity building and development as we intervene. In this administration, we have to deal with the current challenges in local government in the short and mid-term, but we must also look at long-term strategies to service delivery that will make a deep impact in the lives of the people of South Africa. I thank you.
Thank you very much for the overall input, Honorable Deputy Minister. I think this presentation was quite good. It must then flowing from it inform how the actual presentation on the nitty-gritty of the department is going to be made. Let's start with COPTA, please, with cooperative governance. 25 to 30 minutes. Just ensure that you synchronize the presentation to meet that. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think that is enough. May I just start by greeting my minister in absentia, Deputy Minister Albert Papela, and also Deputy Minister Baxter, also in absentia, and greet you, Honorable Chairperson, with all the members of the Select Committee, as well as the DG and CO present here, and my colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just going to go through the presentation as it is in front of you. The outline is just as it is. We'll talk about the purpose and strategic overview, constitutional mandate, legislative mandate, strategic outcome, orientation goals, entities of the department, priorities and program personnel spans, and information and 29 MTF budget allocations. Honorable Chairperson, the purpose of this presentation is to present it to this Honorable Select Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. This is the 2019-2020 annual performance plan of the Department of Cooperative Governance and 2019 medium-term experiential framework, budget allocation for programs and sub-programs. With your permission, Chairperson, when I get to the budget, I will request my CFO, Mrs. Neymar, just to take over. Honorable Chairperson, because there are quite a number of new members, with your permission, I would like just to go through all this in detail as much as possible. The vision of this department is a functional and developmental local government system that delivers its constitutional and legislative mandates within a system of cooperative governance. Our mission is to ensure that all the municipalities in the country perform their basic responsibilities and functions without compromise. They do that by putting people and their concerns first, support the delivery of municipal services to the right quality and the standards, and promoting good governance, transparency and accountability, and ensure sound financial management and accounting, and building institutional resilience and administrative capability. Our department has got the following values. It's guided by the spirit of what to put the people first, and we are committed to public service, integrity and dedication to fighting corruption, hands-on approach to dealing with local challenges, public participation and people-oriented approach, professionalism and goal orientation, passion to serve the people, and excellence as well as accountability. Our constitutional mandate, Honorable Chairperson, as a department of DCOC, is derived primarily from chapters 3, 5, 6, 7, and 9 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act of 1996, thereafter referred to as the Constitution. I'm not going to go into detail into those chapters, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Suffice to say that Chapter 3 deals with cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations. Chapter 5 deals with national intervention and provincial administration, as the DM has alluded to. Chapter 6 deals with provincial intervention in local government. And Chapter 7 deals with municipalities and cooperative governance, and to support and strengthen the capacity of the municipalities to manage their own affairs. As well as Chapter 9 deals with the institutions which are involved in strengthening the constitutional democracy of the country. The DCOC has to conform to the rules set down by institutions such as Auditor General and Public Protector to comply with the legislative frameworks in this chapter. The legislative mandate, also the Honorable Chairperson, I'm not going to go into detail which is in every act, I'll just give you the highlights of those acts. Our function is to develop national policies and legislations for local government, and inter alia monitor the implementation of the following. With the legislation called Municipal Property Rates Act, we are there to regulate the power of municipalities to impose rates on property in accordance to Section 229, Subsection 2 of the Constitution. With the Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act, we are there to manage our financial management of the financial affairs of the municipalities and other institutions in local government. We've got also Disaster Management Act, which is there to develop an integrated and coordinated disaster management policy, focusing on prevention of risk, reduction, severity, mitigation, emergency preparedness, and as well as establish national, provincial, and municipal disaster management centers. The act, the legislation called Local Government Municipal Systems Act, briefly it is there to define the manner in which municipality powers and functions are exercised and performed as well. And also is providing the framework for local and public administration and human resource development. The Local Government Municipal Structures Act is there to define types of municipality relevant with each category of the municipality. As we go along, honorable members, those of you who are new, you will understand all what we mean by this kind of mandates. The act called Intergovernmental Relations Frameworks Act is there to facilitate coordination.
Skip this slide of acts. I think many members are quite conversant about this.
Thank you.
We want you to get to the meat, to the nuts and bolts.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
On slide number 10, that is where the department has got 8 strategic goals. And also, I'm not going to go into detail with strategic goals later on. We will see the metrics between the goals, objectives, and the targets. So, with your permission, can I just pass that just to say there are strategic goals. You'll see later how they are related. And then there are public, there are entities. There's 4 of them: South African Local Government Association, known as SALGA, Agricultural Cities Network, Municipal Demonstration Board, as well as Municipal Infrastructure Support Agent, MISA, which we'll be presenting later on. Honorable Chairperson and members, we have looked onto the 6th administration, and we've come up with the priorities of government. You will find that DCOC has got its own priorities currently, and we're looking forward to the priorities of the 6th administration, and manner of being forward-looking, whereby we're dealing with economic transformation and job creation, education, skills and health, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quantitative services, social integration, human settlement in local government, social cohesion and safe communities, a capable, ethical and developmental state, and a better Africa and the world. Chairperson, I'm just getting now gradually to the gist of what you have asked for. That is on slide number 14. That is where we've got the summary of performance plans per program. The Department of Cooperative Governance has got 6 programs. Namely, program 1 is administration, program 2 is regional and urban development and legislative support, which has got a number of programs and number of indicators as stated on that page. There's also institutional development with 4 programs and 5 indicators. National Disaster Management Center with 1 strategic objective and 3 indicators. Local government support and intervention management with two strategic objectives and one indicator, and community work program with one objective and four performance indicators. So later on, as we present, you will notice that we're going to bring your attention to those 18 indicators and how we intend to achieve them quarterly as per the fourth quarter. I'm not worried about time constraints, but I want to do justice to all these six programs. I'm going to put much emphasis on the annual targets because we are now dealing with the APP. The first program, which is called Program 1, as I said, there's a purpose of each and every program that is stated there. For example, it's providing strategic leadership, management, and support services to the department, and the goal is effective and efficient internal corporate governance processes and systems, and the objective is to ensure good governance and a sound internal control environment by March 2020. What is important is how are we going to achieve that? What is our annual target? Annual target there is that we want to see 100% implementation of the 2018-2019 post-audit action plan to improve audit outcomes by 31st March 2020. How are we going to do that? We've divided it into four quarters of the year. With your permission, Chairperson, may I not go through all those four quarters, just as you know that there is a target and we are confident to achieve it. Program 2 on slide number 16, regional and urban development and legislative support, there's a purpose, there's a goal, there are objectives listed there. The annual target is that we want to support programs implemented in four identified intermediate cities, municipalities by 31st March 2020. And the IUDF strategy and implementation program for small town regeneration to be approved by Director General by 31st December 2019. And then also the other annual target of slide number 17 is to see to the integrated planning coordinating model for the 44 district municipalities and 8 metropolitan municipalities approved by the Minister by 31st March 2020. I'm also looking forward to draft integrated township economic development program developed by 31st March 2020. The targets, the quarterly targets are listed with each and every target. Coming to institutional development, which is program 3, with its purpose, strategic goals, and strategic objectives, we've got the following targets that we intend to achieve. We want to have a municipal-specific revenue plan, which is implemented in 35 municipalities, to increase revenue base, revenue collection rates, and payment of creditors by 31st March 2020. Also, 71 municipalities are set in terms of compliance with the rating aspects of the Municipal Rates Act, Property Rates Act, and outcomes of the assessment communicated to 71 municipalities by 31st March 2020. This program, Chairperson, will see to the 113 municipalities supported to a functional ward committees by 31st March 2020. A Municipal Systems Amendment Bill introduced to Parliament by 31st March 2020. And also we want to training on local government anti-corruption strategy to be rolled out in 13 districts out of the 44 districts municipalities as well as metros by 31st March 2020. Moving to Program 4, Honorable Chairperson, the National Disaster Management Center, with its purpose, which is to promote integrated and coordinated system of disaster prevention, mitigation and risk management, with the goal of coordinating effective integrated disaster management and fire services with the listed objectives. The main target is to 12 municipalities to be assessed on the capacity to implement the National Fire Safety and Prevention Strategy by 2019-2020. And also 7 integrated advocacy and awareness programs successfully held in partnership with municipalities to promote and advance disaster risk. And also 2 disaster management authority guidelines approved by the head of NDMC by 31st March 2020. Moving on, Honorable Chairperson, to Program 5, which is local government support and intervention management, which has its purpose to conduct performance monitoring, support and intervention in municipalities and provincial departments of cooperative governments to drive B2B activities. And the DM has alluded that later on will explain to you as what B2B is all about. We want to make sure that 183 municipalities supported on NIC, Municipal Infrastructure Grant, spending for infrastructure development by 31st March 2020. The program 6, which the Deputy Minister has also alluded to, we want to make sure that we are providing a social safety net and work experience for participants and promote social and economic inclusion by targeting areas of unemployment. We want to make sure that the goal of this program is local public employment programs expanded through Comdoba program with an objective to provide a number of work opportunities. The annual target is 247,466 work opportunities provided to CWP participants by 31st March 2020. And also those number of participants are also trained, because one of the major purposes of this program is to train people so that they can be self-sufficient and find jobs for themselves. We're also making sure that we have five partnerships to be established by 31st March 2020, and we'll also revise the CWP operating model, which will be approved by the Minister by 31st March 2020. You'll recall that the Deputy Minister has also alluded to that. As my request, Honorable Chairperson, on slide 26, I would request the Chief Financial Officer, Mrs. Neymar, to take from that and then up to the end. With your permission, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members, with regard to the slide 27, I think it's important just to note that the total budget of the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, it's vote for, it's 90 billion. For 1920, it's increased to 98 and 106 billion in 21-22, of an average increase of 8.8%. Then just to maybe highlight that the increase in of 121.6% in the budget for Program 2 mainly relates to the introduction of our new Integrated Urban Development Grant from 2019 financial year. The decrease of 31.4% in the National Disaster Management Center is the once-off allocation in the 1920 financial year for the disaster recovery grant. The next slide, I will be brief on the next slide, it's just a division of the allocations to vote for with regard to compensation of employees, which is the payment of the officials mainly, goods and services. There we will see the bulk of the funding is provided for our community work program. And then transfers and subsidies, all the transfers mainly to our municipalities. We will get to the detail in a few minutes. Payment of capital assets and payment of financial assets. On the next slide, it basically provides a detail of the transfers and special allocations. Important to note for municipal infrastructure grants, we've got the 14 billion, which grew to 16 billion in 21-22. I will just highlight the key matters. Local government equitable share, there is 68 billion, it grew to 82 billion. Then our community work program, as I've indicated, 4 billion, it grew to 4.5. Also important to note that the money for our Department of Traditional Affairs also form part of the budget of vote 4. It's 163 million, it grew to 185. Then with regard to our municipal infrastructure support agent, it's 343 million, it grew to 382 million. The money flow also through the department. The operational budget of the Department of Corporate Governance itself is that 639 million, which include then also all the different economic classifications like compensation, goods and services, transfers, capital, etc. If we look at the last slide, Chairperson members, it's important to note that our, if we break down the budget of vote 4, we will see that the bulk of the money, 94.2%, is actually allocated as transfers and subsidies, of which the bulk will go to the municipalities. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chairperson, done in record time. 10 minutes were given to MISA, so that they can use that time. We'll be within 30 minutes.
No, it's okay. But I'm sitting here deeply worried. I'm worried because, and I'm thinking just aloud, Tore, whether you're going to meet this target that you set for yourself. Local government is in a crisis, and this presentation is just a normal presentation, which doesn't say to our sitting here that we are in a crisis. Only 18 municipalities obtained clean audit from 33. The debt of Eskom has escalated. Irregular expenditure has tripled. Supply chain management transgressions are very, very high. Deviations in terms of Section 32 regulations. Poor leadership and planning. Non-expenditure of your MIG funds. And I'm sitting here, you are not even saying any of these things when we're in this crisis. Why is it business as usual when we're facing this kind of crisis in the country? And how do we address in these particular issues? And for me, it's like, it's business as usual. The department itself has obtained a disclaimer. And it is a department that's supposed to clean up these other municipalities. And I don't get a sense where I see it, Tore. You're really geared up to extricate the department from this, what I call the quagmire of embarrassment. Now, I see you raising hands. I was just making, as a chair, these observations, and I know you are geared up, you want to engage in the presentations. I proposed, chiefly, that we must allow all of these presentations, but I was just saying, just think aloud, is this what we do in the face of the crisis that is facing the country in relation to the issues that I'm raising? I'm just flagging this issue as we allow the other two presentations. I have said, we'll be, unless you want to do something different, I'll afford you members to speak, but this is just an observation that I'm making. Honorable Minister, Honorable Premier, all of you want to speak.
Yes.
All of you.
Thank you.
No,
Chair. I want to call order to you.
Yes.
Allow them to finish.
Yes.
Because we've got all what you're talking about
okay.
In our question. Okay. Now you are limiting us by doing this observation.
I'm
you are not in order, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you. And I was just raising the issues to say the second presentation is coming. We are supposed to be dealing with these issues. We are going to engage quite fruitful in terms of this particular, Okay, let's move on then, it's okay. Okay, fine, no problem. Second presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Chair, can we move to slide number, the next slide? Is that our presentation outline? Which is the purpose, which is a strategic overview, Chairperson. And then we have got a program and sub-program plans. And then the last chair will talk to the MTF budget estimates.
Kanemo. In terms of the purpose, Chair, I will just dump the slide, but it's to brief the committee on the plan of MESA for 2019-20. Can we move? Pat, can we move? This is our vision, Chair, and the mission. I'm not going to bore the committee with regard to that. I take it as read. This is a very important slide, Chair, in terms of why MESA was established. MESA, Chair, was established, as you will recall, in 2012 in terms of the presidential proclamation. And amongst its functions, Chair, the broad function as indicated above, contained in our operational notice, one, to support municipalities to conduct effective infrastructure planning, which is very key. Also to support municipalities with the implementation of infrastructure projects. And also, Chair, to assist municipalities in the operation and maintenance of municipal infrastructure. It has indicated we've got a serious crisis of failing infrastructure currently. And the key, Chair, which is one of our core mandates, is to build the capacity of municipalities to sustainably deliver on their own without the support of other entities like MESA. And we are striving towards that person. And the last chair is to perform any other function that is ancillary to the above functions. In other words, MESA may be assigned by the minister to provide any other support to municipality, which is not necessarily what is specified in terms of the operational notice, but which is linked to the mandate of MESA. These are our organizational values, Chair. I'm not going to go through them. I will take that as read. In terms of the strategic goals and objectives, Chair, we have got five strategic goals with each strategic objectives. I'm not going to go through each, Chair, as I will be taking you through each when I present the plan. In terms of our APP plan, Chair, we have got strategic goal one, point one, which is improve organizational performance and corporate image through strategic leadership and effective oversight. There, Chair, we have planned firstly to develop and implement a communication strategy for MESA. As you know, MESA for a very long time has not been operating with, didn't have its own logo. Currently, you will see in our plan, in our presentation, there's a new logo, which was started, which was approved last financial year late. And we're saying we're going to implement that strategy, as our plan this financial year. And also, Chair, which is part and parcel of compliance. We have a risk management plan which must be implemented and of the target of four, as well as internal audit plan against annual audit coverage plan which must be implemented. Then we've got a target of four as well. These are four, plans that must be implemented. And also we've got a target to implement ICT operational plan by 30 April each. Yeah, and which must be implemented. It's still part and parcel of compliance, Chair. And also, Chair, we have a target of achieving unqualified audit, which, of course, we've been getting unqualified audit since MESA was established. And our plan was to achieve unqualified audit even this time around, Chair, hopefully without much of emphasis, Chairperson. And also we have a plan of making sure that we implement our procurement plan and submit them to National Treasury by 31 March each year, which is a compliance issue, and that we have planned to do that. Then coming to the core programs, Mr. This is one of our main core programs, Technical Support Services Program, Chair. Almost 80% of our budget is sitting in this program. And our strategic objective there, Chair, is to implement effective sector and strategic planning for municipal infrastructure management. Later, we have an indicator which is the number of municipal technical support plans developed and implemented to improve infrastructure planning, delivery, operations, and maintenance. I'm sure committee members will say why I was talking about the plan in technical support plan. This is our main indicator, Chair, if I may indicate, Chairperson. This is where we then have a technical support plan which we sign with the municipality containing all support needs of a municipality and agreeing with the municipality in terms of how those needs must be addressed. And then we sign a memorandum of agreement, which will then be used to set up the roles and responsibilities of each role player in terms of addressing all those challenges. This is where you will see that we support a number of projects which we are monitoring and also which are assisting the municipality to plan and implement. And this is where sometimes MESA will be appointed as an implementing agent and support those municipalities. All those plans, we then contain them in this technical support plan. Previously, Chair would indicate the number of projects that will be implemented. AG felt that our APT was just too much what to do that, and let's rather come up with one indicator that will be able to cover all the activities that we are doing in the municipal environment, and then have those technical support plans which will then be signed and they reported against. So our plan is to then support 87 municipalities this financial year. Therefore, we'll then sign 87 technical support plans with those municipalities focusing on the issues around the infrastructure planning, delivery, operations, and maintenance. Already we have the list of the 87 municipalities if the committee would want to see the list. And we have got a number of municipalities that will support through the district support teams to improve spending on MIG. What we will then do, Chair, we have got over 84 engineers, qualified, provincial registered civil engineers, Chairperson, town and regional planners, electrical engineers, which we have deployed in these municipalities. And we have deployed them through what we call a district support model. So we have got 16 district support teams with all these engineers and the town planners placed in a particular district to support a number of municipalities in that particular district, which are part and parcel of the prioritized municipalities. The intention there is to assist municipalities, in particular those who are struggling with implementation of MIG, as well as other grants. But our focus in the main is on the making sure that the MIG grant is properly spent, and not only that expenditure, but the quality of that spend. And then the next one, Chair, is the number of municipalities supported with development and implementation of SPLUMA compliant plans, dealing with issues around land use management schemes, FTF, IDPs, and by assisting with bylaws, the National Special Development Frameworks, and also the alignment of special social labor plans with the IDPs. There, we have got 30 municipalities that will be supported with the development and implementation of SPLUMA compliant plans. That is where we'll be using our town and regional planners, Chair, which are paid with municipalities, to assist the selected, municipalities with those sector plans. And also, Chair, we have 14 municipalities that will be assisted with the alignment of their social labor plan with the IDPs. Already we have that list as well, Chairperson. Then the next one, Chairperson, is number of municipalities supported implementation of sector plans. Sector plan, in this case, we refer to the master plans, your energy master plan, your water conservation and demand management plans, operations and maintenance plans. Here, Chairperson, we have got already plans that MESA developed and were approved by councils. Now, we said we are not going to support municipalities with new plans. Let's assist them with the implementation of the plan that we've already assisted them to develop. So we've got 20 of them as stated there. And of course, our plan next year is to reach the 44 districts, as the president indicated, that we need to focus on the 44 districts and the 8 metros. And the number of municipalities supported annually through the regional management support program. This program, this is a flagship program that MISA initiated in 2017-18. This is a change management program or institutional turnaround program, which focuses on the whole institution, not just a technical area in a municipality. This came as a result of a study which was conducted by Dr. Ian Palmer in 2010 around the impact of MIG to say what are the returns on investment since MIG was established in 2004. And then the results were that there is very little to show in terms of the return on investment, mainly because of the lack of reliability. There's a lot that has been done in terms of building infrastructure, but in terms of making sure that infrastructure is sustainable, produces water and so forth, there's little to show. And the findings were that the challenge is because there's a serious challenge around the management processes and procedures in municipalities, and that there's a need for a management support which will focus onto the whole value chain, where we will then deploy a multidisciplinary expert teams which will focus on the water, the engineering side, focus on the HR side, focus on the supply chain, focus on the procurement, and as well as all other areas which are critical for the delivery, including finance, for the delivery of the function, the water function. So we've got three municipalities where we're currently piloting this program. National Treasury gave us 80 million to pilot this program. So we're piloting it in Amatuale district, or Tambo district in the Eastern Cape, as well as Kuhune district in Limpopo. Our plan, of course, is to scale up the program in other municipalities as well. Then the next strategic objective is municipal infrastructure asset assessment, analysis, and research conducted. There we have got the number of district municipalities which will be supporting through the inspectorate to assess functionality of water and sanitation infrastructure. That this is a new kind of program that MISA is initiating. FFC recommended that MISA should have inspectorate which must assist the ongoing assessment of the quality of infrastructure and quality audits in terms of what is being developed, and produce reports on an ongoing but inform interventions. So we've started that using our chief engineers. We've got 9 chief engineers that we have then grouped together to form an infrastructure inspectorate. So we have a target of 18 district municipalities that will be supported through this inspectorate to assess functionality of water and sanitation infrastructure. And then we've got then the next target, search objective is to ensure technical capacity building in municipalities. As indicated when I was presenting the mandate, I indicated that one of our core mandates is to build internal capacity in the municipalities for them to sustainably deliver services. Then we've got a number of programs that we are running, learnership programs as well as the young graduate programs, including artisan development programs. So we've got a number of learners which are enrolled in MISA apprenticeship program towards the qualification as the artisan chairperson. We have 230 learners currently enrolled into the MISA apprenticeship program. Our target is 2019-20. And we're planning to increase that number in 2020-2021 to 350, and then also to 500 in the outer years. And also a number of learners enrolled in MISA Experiential Learnership Program. We have 70 learners which we have taken to enroll in the MISA Experiential Learnership Program in 2019-20. and we plan to increase that number to 50 in the next financial year and also in the outer years. There were a number of candidates enrolled in Mr. Young Graduate Program. This is one of the key programs that MISA is been implementing, where we recruit young graduates who recently qualified as engineers or as town and regional planners or as GIS specialists at all professions in the built environment. We have a target of recruiting 135 candidates engineers into our young graduate program, which will be assisted toward registration, professional registration as engineers, with the hope that municipalities will then absorb them in their system. And we have already appointed mentors, which will then hold these young graduates and mentor them until they are registered as professionals. And then continuing with this objective, Chair, number of municipal officials provided technical skills training, which is part and parcel of our core mandate of building capacity, with a target of 250 municipal officials which will provide technical skills training. There, Chair, we have got providers like IMESA, SISA, PDP, which are assisting us with the training of municipal officials on a range of technical programs, like contract management, project management, and so forth. And our plan, we have got a plan of training 250. And the number of municipal officials, so-called Section 28 apprentices, enrolled in MISA Artisan Recognition or Prior Learning Program. This program is targeting municipal officials who have been in a municipality, either as water process controllers, but not qualified. There are many of them, laborers, who have been doing this work, but who are not necessarily having recognized qualifications. Then we are assisting them through recognition of prior learning so that they can be registered as artisans. So we've got 80 municipal officials that are targeted this financial year toward in that program. The number of students provided with bursaries for studies in technical professions. So as you will recall, we have been saying there is a serious challenge of engineers in this country. And as part and parcel of MISA contribution towards increasing the capacity in terms of skills, then we also provide bursaries to students who are interested in becoming civil engineers or town and regional planners or GIS specialists. So we've got 80 students that we're targeting this financial year. We already have others that are in the program at Chaperson. And also number of municipalities supported with compilation and implementation of capacity development plans. What we did, Chaperson, we discovered that there are a number of capacity development programs running by different entities who are supporting municipalities, but which are not necessarily coordinated and aligned. And we then developed a capacity development framework last year with the aim of saying each entity that seeks to support a municipality must find a municipality with its own plan to say, if you want to come and support Kukune with capacity, whatever capacity development you want to do, is our plan. Now, whatever you want to do, do it within the confines of this plan. Now, currently, we have a number of municipalities. In Limpopo, for instance, we have already assisted 7 municipalities with the development of their capacity development plans, specific development plans, partnering with the Office of the Premier, COGTA, as well as GTEC. And those plans already have been approved by the councils, and this year we're assisting them with the implementation of those plans. And also in Mpumalanga as well, we've got 15 municipalities that were assisting with the compilation and implementation of their capacity development plan. And we have got a program called PMO in MISA. It started as a program where we were assigned to provide technical support to the IMTT, the Interministerial Task Team on Service Delivery, which was focusing on the 27 priority districts, which has now been escalated to include the 57 priority municipalities. Now, we want to then, we said we need to set up a functional PMO that will enable us to provide that capacity in terms of support, but also to assist MISA going forward in terms of the implementation of projects in municipalities. So this is what we'll be focusing on now, to focus on that PMO to make sure that it's fully effective and it has got all the methods and standards that are required for a fully functional program management office. And then for the number of municipalities that will be supporting implementation of national treasurer ICMS and framework contracts. That we have got an agreement with treasurer that MISA will assist with the rollout of infrastructure delivery management system in local government. Treasurer they started this program in national and the provincial government. And then we agreed that in local government, MISA will be assisting the rollout of that program, including assisting municipalities with challenges around procurement by setting up a range of framework contracts, which will then ease the burden from municipalities instead of having to go out on tender for repetitive goods and services. They can just place orders against those framework contracts. We've already set up a number of framework contracts for water and sanitation goods and services, as well as electrical transformers. And now we're assisting the 15 municipalities already who have shown interest in the implementation, in participating in those framework contracts. So our focus this financial year will be to assist those municipalities and make sure that they use those framework contracts appropriately. And also, Chair, we have a target that talks to the misalignment of bulk and regulation. As you will recall, Chair, we have a challenge in the country where we have about 18 water service authorities where the bulk already done and complete, but there are no matching registration plans to make sure that the bulk at the end of the day does service the people. Now, most of these municipalities are these rural district municipalities, which have got challenges in terms of financing their plans to reticulate infrastructure and disinfrastructure. So we said, let's assist these municipalities in partnership with the DPSA, water and sanitation, and ourselves, and the department, to first do a feasibility study to check what are the socio-economic profiles of these areas where this infrastructure is. That if the municipality were to be assisted to borrow money to reticulate this infrastructure, what impact will this have on the municipal finances going forward? And whether these municipalities, these communities, can, if we upgrade the level of service on their own, be able to pay for these services so that at least we reduce the burden from the municipality. So we are currently doing feasibility studies for 5 of the 18 water services authorities, which will tell us in terms of what strategy must we follow to assist these municipalities to make sure that ultimately this infrastructure is not lying there and not servicing the people. But the challenge that we have discovered now is that people are beginning to illegally connect themselves in some of these dams, and the infrastructure also is decaying because some of these dams have been there for quite some time. So this is a plan that we are working together, not as MISA, but other role players, including water and sanitation, as well as the DPSA. In terms of the budget, Chairperson, as the CFO has indicated, the MISA allocation for this financial year is 343 million. And you will see, as I indicated earlier, our core program is the technical support program. About 230 million of this budget goes to that program. This is where we have got professional registered engineers, the planners, and the support municipalities. And then we have got another core program, which is the infrastructure delivery management support program. This is where our project management capacity is seated. It's 23 million. And we've got 90 million that goes to administration. In terms of our audit outcome trends, Chairperson, we see that we've been getting unqualified audit. Of course, it matters. We have improved. I had a meeting yesterday with the audit committee and the AG. The indication is that we might get unqualified audit opinion without matters. What is called clean audit. In terms of concluding, Chair,
were saying this, the approved APP for 2019-20 is aligned to some extent with the medium-term strategic framework for the next 5 years of the sixth administration, and further alignment of the plan of the strategic goals and objectives and performance indicators with the MTSF outcomes and targets will be reflected in the strategic plan for the next 5 years from 2020 and 2021 financial year, and we strive to contribute to the MTSF and targets in the implementation of our current APP as envisaged in our plan. And simultaneously, the entity will continue to maintain effective governance and internal control system. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes. Okay. Let's take the last presentation then before we engage. Traditional numbers.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. This is a presentation on behalf of the Department of Traditional Affairs, a fairly new department that originally operated as part of what was DPLG, provincial government, provincial and local government, but is now established as a fully-fledged department. If we could just go to that slide, just show the outline. I won't spend time on that. And the next three slides just talk about the mandate of the department, critically to indicate that the institution of traditional leadership is recognized in the Constitution, Section 211, and also that the Constitution makes a provision that national legislation may provide for the establishment of houses of traditional leadership at national and local level. On the next slide, just to indicate that it's a concurrent function, concurrent national and provincial legislative competence, and that we then also have the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, which then deals with what the Constitution spoke about, that legislation may be put in place to define the role and functions of traditional leaders and make provision for the establishment of houses. That other slide there, it's really just about the House of National House of Traditional Leaders. It's also about the Seattle Rights Commission, which at the moment gets a transfer from the Department of Traditional Affairs, but to the extent that its work relates to the rights of cultural, religious, and linguistic communities, that dovetails with the work that we do in traditional affairs. And the last one there, the Municipal Structures Act, particularly Section 81, when it talks about the participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils. The next slide just talks about the vision, mission, and values, which I won't speak a lot about. Slide 8 talks about our strategic outcome-oriented goals. We've got four of them. One of them is about an institution of traditional leadership which promotes community development. It's about cohesive traditional and coherent communities. It's about a functional institution of traditional leadership, and it's about cultural practices that conform to the Bill of Rights. So the rest of the presentation speaks to our actual activities towards the advancement of those strategic objectives. The next three slides take the very strategic objectives that are the goals that I've spoken about, and they just show how they are aligned to the National Development Plan and how they are aligned to the various outcomes of government. So you'll see Chapter 6 there aligned to our work on the institution traditional leadership that promotes community development. The next slide, which talks about the functional institution of traditional leadership, relates to Chapter 13 of the NDP, and so on. If you look at the next one, where Chapter 15 talks about transforming society and uniting the country, the work we do on promoting social cohesion and nation building amongst traditional leaders. Then you have a couple of slides there that just take those goals and come up with indicators there. So I won't spend a lot of time on that as well, because it just shows that for community development, you are looking at an increase in the percentage of traditional leadership structures that promote community development, whether at traditional council level, at King's Council level, and so on. The next slide after that also just takes the one on cohesive traditional and coherent leadership, communities, and just shows that for cohesion in that area, what are the things that we are interested in. Then you have the slide after that, which takes the third goal on functional institutional traditional leadership. Again, just shows the indicators, and followed by the one on cultural practices that conform to the Bill of Rights. Again, just shows our concerns there around initiation deaths and injuries. And so when it comes to the actual activities for the year, we'll speak to those issues. You then have a slide that then speak to the strategic objectives. We've got seven of them, but all of them, of course, are linked to the four goals that we have already spoken about. So strategic objective one is more internal, looking at our own operations internally, the issue of unqualified audit outcomes. We've been receiving unqualified audit outcomes to date, so it's just making sure that we maintain that achievement. Strategic objective on promoting and managing a traditional affairs information and research agenda, so that information on the sector is easily and readily available. Strategic objective three, which talks about dispute and claims, to make sure that we stabilize the sector in terms of the disputes and claims of traditional leadership that continue to exist. And strategic outcome objective four, which deals with their participation in socio-economic development. Strategic objective five, which speaks to the functionality of their structures, the councils, and so on. And then strategic outcome six, objective six, which talks about promoting and strengthening intergovernmental relationships and ensuring that there is participation of traditional leaders or the institution of traditional leadership in other forums of government. And then finally, strategic objective seven and eight, which respectively talk about social cohesion and the issue of deaths and injuries emanating from the cultural initiation practice. So from here now, we talk about the actual activities for the year, our annual performance plan and targets, what is it that we'll be doing. If we look at the next slide, which speaks to program one administration, here, as I indicated, the target is to make sure that we maintain our performance when it comes to unqualified audit outcomes, and that's the key issue that we are trying to address there. And the next slide, which is the next program, which is about research policy and legislation, I spoke about the research agenda. So we have a research agenda that we have developed, and every year we identify particular projects from the research agenda that we then pursue. So specifically for this year, there will be research on the prevailing forms of stigma and prejudices against Khoi and San people. This emanates from a report that was released by the Human Rights Commission. That report focusing on the human rights of the Khoi and San communities. And one of the recommendations from that report was that our department should conduct this research, which looks at the prevailing forms of stigma and prejudice against the Khoi and San people. So we'll be doing that this year, and also looking at the promotion of socio-economic participation of the Khoi and San communities. We're also focusing on the issue of the resolution of traditional leadership disputes and claims. We have developed a framework. We'll be looking at reviewing that framework as we continue to implement it. We've been going around and running workshops and assisting royal families in the application of that framework to resolve disputes and claims. Still with program two, research policy and legislation, what we have also realized, Chairperson, is that there's a lot of information that needs to be consolidated and made easily accessible about the sector. How many traditional councils are there? Who are the members? In terms of royal families, the royal family for this particular kinship, who are they, and so on and so on. And the project there will be focusing on an information management framework that will help us consolidate all this information for ease of access. And then, of course, the work that we started a few years ago about documenting customary laws of succession and genealogy in royal families. This is basically to ensure that there's much predictability in future. So if you document how succession takes place in a particular royal family in future when the time comes and that they need to identify an appropriate heir. There is already a documented law on customary law on succession that they can then rely on. So we take about one each year. We've done about 8 thus far, so we'll be taking another one during the course of 2019-20. And the next slide is the third program, which is institutional support and coordination. Here it relates to that goal that talks about ensuring that the institution of traditional leadership participates in community development. So a key project here that we have identified is what we call an agrarian revolution program, where we work with the institution of traditional leadership to identify land that is available in traditional air communities, which land then can be used as a basis for agricultural projects. We did some work with about 14 such communities last year, and we'll be continuing that during the course of 1920 as well. But aligned to that also, we'll be looking at other areas where they're already doing exciting things. So we'll be looking at other areas where there are exciting things that are already happening, and we'll be trying to make sure that we document those good practices so that they can be disseminated to other areas. Traditional leaders, Chairperson, have raised a need to have a land summit for traditional leadership, because they have said that whenever you talk about expropriation of land, you talk about 13% of the land that is under the custodianship of the institution of traditional leadership. What role do we see the institution of traditional leadership play? What form of communal land tenure do we expect in these areas? So we'll be then working with other sister departments to coordinate the hosting of a land summit for traditional leaders. The next slide talks is still the third program on institutional support and coordination. This is about a cooperative governance framework for traditional leadership in local government. What we've done here is we've developed a framework that basically indicates different intergovernmental structures in which the institution of traditional leadership can participate. And we will then be applying that and testing that in different provinces, where you will see, well, at the level of MECs and the Premier, how do they interface with the institution of traditional leadership? At the level of mayors, for instance, how does the institution interface with the institution of traditional leadership? And that's what that framework will seek to do. Next slide, within the department, there is also the National House of Traditional Leaders. They are also on board when it comes to this issue of socio-economic development. So they've got a socio-economic development program, and they'll be focusing on the implementation of that program during the course of 2019-2020. Next slide is still part of Program 3, Institutional Support and Capacity Building. What we are doing here is to develop an integrated capacity building program for the institution. So, for example, once you've got new traditional councils that have been elected and appointed, once you have the reconstitution of this council, we want to make sure that there's a program readily available for their induction so that they know what their roles and responsibilities are. And then we also have a program on social cohesion. So annually we'll then pick one or two projects from that program. This year we'll particularly be focusing on a program where we'll organize a dialogue for women in traditional leadership, emanating from an experience we had last year where we organized a dialogue on harmful cultural practices. And it was organized under the theme, Not In My Culture. And we had traditional communities debating these issues, and Chapter 9 bodies debating this issue. And a recommendation was made that a critical issue now is how female traditional leaders are being treated in the sector, and we need to have a dialogue here where we can exchange experiences and so on. And linked to that will be the one on gender-based violence in traditional leadership. Next slide. It's still part of the institutional support and coordination. The sub-program there is partnership. As I indicated, Section 81 of the Municipal Structures Act makes provision for the participation of the traditional councils in municipal councils. And here what we've done is we've developed guidelines which then can guide the participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils, in the development of IDPs and so on. And we'll be rolling this out. We've started that process. We'll continue with that process in the course of 2020. Links to that will be the workshops that will be running on that framework that I spoke about earlier on cooperative governance for traditional leadership. National House of Traditional Leaders, that's the next slide. I think here the key issue is it's also ensuring that because they have bought into the work that I spoke about around agrarian revolution, is to make sure that the provincial houses of traditional leaders also come on board and participate in that program. The next slide is about the Women Empowerment Program of the National House of Traditional Leaders, and they will be continue to roll that out in selected provinces during the course of 1920. And then, of course, linked to that is a very critical part of our work, which is around cultural initiation. There are guidelines that have been developed, so every time the initiation season comes up, the House then focuses on rolling out a monitoring process to make sure that they impact positively on the reduction in the number of injuries and deaths emanating from the cultural practice of initiation. And the next slide there talks about just two last projects. The one is the issue that we have identified being raised as a concern, that infrastructure for the institution of traditional leadership, like if you look at buildings of traditional councils, for example, there isn't consistency in terms of who owns them, who's responsible for maintaining them. So, for example, the provincial department will make funds available for the provincial department of public works to help with building the infrastructure. But once it has been put up, on whose asset register is it going to be placed? And over time, who is then responsible for the maintenance of that infrastructure? So here we'll be looking at, based on the experiences of different provinces, let's come up with guidelines that can then be used in this sector. And finally, also the issue of training and capacity building. Although workshops are being run, courses are being offered, we've now thought we should focus on a more streamlined curriculum, which then indicates what are the basic elements which each training program should include for the institution of traditional leadership. And we'll be working with partners there, such as the National School of Government. On the budget, the Honorable Chair, I think the CFO of Cooperative Governance has already spoken to that. I think in her presentation, if you could go to the next slide, she had indicated an amount of about 163 million. Which is a transfer to the Department of Traditional Affairs. So in this presentation, that is the 163 million that we're focusing on. If you look at the 2019-20 estimate there, it shows 163,351,000. Within that, it's an amount of 45,196,000, which is a transfer to the CRL Rights Commission. So the balance then is what is left. The difference between 163 million and 45 million is then what is left between us and the National House of Traditional Leaders. And then the other elements there just shows the split in terms of the different programs of administration, research policy, and legislation, and institutional support and coordination. The next slide just shows the same information in pie chart to show the split percentage-wise, what goes to compensation of employees, what goes to goods and services, what goes to transfers and subsidies, and so on. That's the focus of the Department of Traditional Affairs. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Those are the three presentations. Honorable DM, I was very much worried about Honorable I heard him have a more of and I felt vindicated on Catholic. Well, it's more than anything, as I said, in this meeting. I think we have more time, sufficient time to engage. But can I propose that we just have 5 minutes to stretch our legs?
Thank you, Chief.
And thereafter, let us resume. We have all the time to engage with the people. Is that okay? There are so many issues in this parliament that we are sorting out. Just organize water for members, please.
Someone move us.
Ah,
what will? Go back up start. My daughter has no fear.
Ah,
my daughter has
no fear. I don't know if I'm going to die.
No, I'm not going to die.
I'm not going to die.
I'm not
going to die.
Thank you. engagement, where you are going to
engages the President's plan to secure the President's agenda, as well as making some comments insofar as the presentations are concerned. Can you start, Madam Member? Mama Mola? Number 3 and number 4, I'll come to decide when once we have in that order. Number 5, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. DM, you spoke about that the department has specifically a disclaimer. And out of 33 municipalities, 10 municipalities got clean audit, 23 disclaimer. And in your presentation, you didn't tell us how are you going to assist those municipalities that got a disclaimer. And you didn't tell us about the program of action of your department because you also got a disclaimer. My second question, what are you doing with the provinces and the municipalities that have poor leadership? Are you visiting the provinces or the municipality, or you are sitting in your offices in Pretoria? My third question is in slide 22 of the NISA. You said, slide 22, you said two provinces, number of municipalities supported with compilation and implementation of capacity development plans. You said you visited two provinces. What about the other 7 provinces? When are you going to visit them? My last question is the supply chain management in the municipalities. It's non-functional, it's corrupt, there's everything. What are you doing about that and the deviations that are done in the municipalities? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's Michalakis, it's going to take some time getting used to it, so I will forgive you for the first few months, but thank you for the opportunity. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable Deputy Minister, let me first start by saying thank you very much for your presence. Chairperson, during the previous Parliament, we've had on various occasions in different departments the executive not attending these committees, and we unanimously across party lines decided to send the departments back until someone who can account to us politically actually attends the committee. So for us, it was and it still is for me very important, I'm sure my colleagues would agree, that someone who can answer the political side of the questions are here. So Minister, we really appreciate your attendance. Deputy Minister, my question is fairly simple, and having heard my colleague just now, I think the concerns actually stretch across party political lines, and that is that there are quite a lot, I think the majority of municipalities out there, which we find to be very concerning for the mere fact that municipalities actually are there to deliver the most basic of services to the people. That is the first problems, if there are problems, that they actually feel. Now, in my opinion, the problem that we're facing in the Free State, my colleague over here is from the Northwest, it's fairly basic things. And that would be, if you go to some of these municipalities, at least in my province, you would find that the people who are in place or supposed to be in place to make sure that the municipality functions properly, I beg your pardon, the CFO, the technical director, the municipal manager, are a lot of the time not people properly qualified for it. And the problem that we've faced in the past was that if they do not do their job properly, they just get redeployed to another municipality. So we don't ever get rid of the problem. Secondly, Section 139 interventions don't work because those administrators are deployed on the same basis. They usually are failed municipal managers somewhere, or if they fail to turn the municipality around, they get redeployed as municipal managers in other places. I can give you names, tens of names. I don't need to. You know about them. And until we fix this, we're not going to turn municipalities around. I sit with a small municipality in the Free State, Masinyana, for example, where you don't need more than 5 people in the finance department. They've got 40 people employed over there. I know that you've mentioned earlier on that job creation is a part of the functions of municipalities. I want to respectfully disagree with you and to say that it is not a core function for a municipality to create direct jobs, but rather to create the circumstances for investment so that the private sector can actually create those jobs, because what you get in the end is that 60-70% of your budget goes into salaries because you're trying to create jobs. 50% goes into service delivery, and no one wants to put up a factory or start a business in that town. My constituency was 11 small free state towns, and I can tell you in the 5 years that it was my constituency, I can count the number of new businesses that were started over there on the one hand. And the reason is because the people who are put in charge of the municipalities aren't properly qualified. They're redeployed from somewhere else where they made a mess. And where an intervention is brought in, the administrator is either someone who made a mess of another municipality at some stage, or he doesn't get the cooperation from the municipality to which he is being deployed. So, I mean, that's a basic principle. And I want to respectfully say that until we get that right, until we clean that up across the board, we can do as much as we like, from all over, we're not going to turn municipalities around. And I think we're all in agreement that at this stage, municipalities in this country is at such a stage that if we don't turn it around now, we are going to sit with very big trouble. We would, from our side, absolutely support you in any efforts that are worthwhile in turning that around, specifically those aspects. But I would like to just hear from you, and this is my simple question after such a long statement, is how do you plan to clean up these municipalities, to get rid of the dead wood that's lying there for years and years and years and years, because they are the reason why our municipalities are in such a state. They should respectfully be in jail, not in offices in our municipalities. People are sitting without basic services because they are not doing their jobs, and they get paid millions. You know this, Minister. I would like to know how we're going to fix this together. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Michalakis. Follow, Honorable Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Let's appreciate the input by the DM as well as the presentation by different officials. Chair, I'll start on the issue of Section 139, Chair. What I would like to know on the issue of Section 139, does the department have an audit of municipalities that are under Section 139? Mm-hmm. And two, I want to make an example about the municipality in Grahamstown, Makan municipality. That municipality has been under Section 139. And my question, at which stage do you lift the Section 139 in a particular municipality? Especially that then the issue was the CFO, the municipality manager, and as well instability. All those things are no longer there, but the municipality is still under Section 139. They may have problems here and there in terms of the service delivery, but the things that were identified then were addressed. That's why I'm asking that question, Chair. The second one, Chair, is on the issue of how e-revenue is allocated to municipalities.
Because most of the time, what the budget and treasury is using is they more focus on the population of that particular municipality, not focusing on the backlog on issues of infrastructure in the particular area, which for me it is a problem. You can't only look at one thing, the population, which sometimes that population that you are referring to, it's people that are not even contributing to the revenue of the municipality. So I just want the department to tell us, how do you plan to help those municipalities? One example is Bennett Lodier. You have put together in terms of the demarcation municipalities that doesn't have at all a revenue base. Yet they are expected to deliver services. And that particular municipality, in my view, they don't even sometimes qualify to get certain grants that are given to districts and as well to metros. So just the department to look at that thing and see if it really helps our municipality. Again, on the issue of e generation year revenue by municipality, here I have an example of Great Kai as one municipality, which, as we speak, e-rate payers have taken upon themselves to collect e-rate from their citizenry. Municipality is unable to do so. They won it in court. And now a municipality is getting bankrupt every day. So what is then the role of the department? Because if you look at the municipality, in terms of tourism, it's a very rich municipality. It can generate a lot of revenue for the municipality. And the last issue for me, if you are going to give us a second round chance, it would be on the issue of rollover. The procedure or the way in which you deal with rollover, if a municipality didn't spend the money, sometimes it gets to be taken back by the Office of Budget and Treasury. And in our view is that you are penalizing the citizenry, because the services that are supposed to be delivered in that particular municipality won't be delivered. Rather than penalizing the citizenry, in my view, each department should have a mechanism of dealing with those that have failed to do their work, such that the money is spent on a stipulated time in terms of in Africa, the processes of the municipality. So I would like to pause on those checks. I would like to be on your second round.
Yes, I mean, thanks. If we have time, we'll do that. On our career.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, firstly, let's welcome the report and appreciate the good work that might be done at the level of.
Let's also appreciate the good work that is done at the level of skills development as reported, but we need to be shown physical evidence in terms of the output of those skills development programs that the department is engaged in, which also links to the formalizing of qualifications for those unqualified but skilled workers, because we have picked that thing. It's a step in the right direction, and I think it is much appreciated. But indeed, we need to be honest that there's
more bad than good. And when we raise the negative issues, we shouldn't be taken as if we are pulling them down or we are attacking, but they must take those issues that we are raising, try and go and work on them. I'm raising that thing particularly because some of the issues, yes, I'm partly covered by Honorable Nita on some of the issues I wanted to raise. For instance, there are municipalities that are not financially viable at all. At all, you can do anything. There is no economic activities. You go to a town like Pietrasville in the Northern Cape, where you can count the areas of employment. Many of the people who are working, they are working in the surrounding farms as ordinary farm workers who stay in those farms and come once a month, then they would come to town. So we've got such situations where, for example, the municipality there, Renosterberg municipality, at times they would use even the municipal infrastructure grant to pay salaries, because they don't have a source of revenue at all. You can even say 90% of the people there are unemployed. So what do we do with that? Why don't we consider building bigger municipalities with a financial muscle? Because many of the people from Pietrasville are working in the art, those that are working in skills jobs. They are working in the art, which is Mtanjeni municipality. They stay there, they pay rates and taxes there. They come home once a month. And Pietrasville is just 100 kilometers from DR. In fact, they do everything in DR. Why don't you see? I'm saying in terms of the municipal demarcation, those are the issues that should be debated moving forward so that we create financially viable municipalities that will be able to render the services that we want to the people. The other challenge is the issue of rates and taxes. Rates and taxes are not standardized. Kimberley is smaller than Bloemfontein, but rates and taxes in Kimberley are higher than rates and taxes of Bloemfontein, Mangaung municipality, which is a metropolitan municipality. Electricity tariffs of Kimberley are almost twice the price of electricity tariffs of Mangaung municipality. So how do we get those issues to be regulated so that we don't have an unfair advantage? Because if you check in terms of economic activities, Bloemfontein is better off than Kimberley. But in terms of what people pay to stay in those cities, they pay more in Kimberley than what they pay in Bloemfontein. What is it that is being done in terms of making sure that at least they are standardized? And also a resolution on this issue of some communities getting electricity directly from Eskom and others getting the electricity from the municipalities. For instance, in Soweto municipality, we've got a situation, there's an area called Richi. The people from Richi are getting electricity directly from Eskom. But people from Platform in the same municipality that are getting municipality from the electricity from the municipality are paying more for electricity than people from Richi. So those are the things that also create imbalances that we need to address moving forward. And you must clarify to us, maybe I'm the only one who is not very equipped to understand the difference between an agency and an agent. Maybe I'm the only one. So you need to explain to us what's the difference between an agency and an agent. Because from where I'm sitting, the department pays money whether to an agency or an agent to implement particular programs for the department. So I think we need to clarify that thing. There's a problem of fiscal dumping in our particularly in our department, where, for example, COFSTA in the Northern Cape, when they approach the end of the financial year, and they have underspent on housing, what they do, they take the money, they dump it into the housing development agency, they dump it into those entities, those PSPs that they have. They split the money amongst them. Their books say the money has been spent, and the money is dumped somewhere, so that those agencies must come and implement in the next year. And that's where corruption happens at a large scale. So I think that also the department needs to find a way of resolving that particular matter. The issue of traditional leaders. All of us will agree that Tosas have got a king. Temus have got a king. Kalekas have got a king. Zulus have got a king. And many other nationalities have got their own king. But the reality of the matter is that in our country there's only one super king who's got the biggest budget ever, who can go and address the provincial legislature at any given time. But we don't get that happening in other kingdoms. What work are we doing to address that particular disparity so that we don't see, we don't divide ourselves along those traditional lines? Because there's already a tension that is brewing, especially in the Eastern Cape. There's already a tension that is brewing, that our kings are not respected as much as other kings are respected, and we don't want that to happen. So I think that's another issue. That's an issue that traditional affairs should be looking at seriously and make sure that we've got a way of dealing with that thing. The final thing, Chair, we've got a place called Orania in the Northern Cape. I think everyone has read about Orania. Those that have been to the Northern Cape have gone to Orania. Orania has refused to be part of any municipality. And they are not. Orania, they've got their own private water rights. They get their own electricity directly from Eskom. There's nothing that links them with the municipalities where they are demarcated. And when you look into Orania, Orania is not a town. It's a farm. We need to look at a legal way of making sure that we integrate the people of Orania. Because it's a farm that is specially reserved for those whites who want nothing to do with blacks. They do everything on their own in Orania. We need to find a way of integrating them, and also in the spirit of cooperative governance, that community of Orania must be integrated. We know there's that particular section in the Constitution that allows for self-determination. But does that self-determination mean that we must have an island in the country that is inaccessible to anyone of another race except for their own races? Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Zanalela.
Thank you very much, Chair. Some of the things have been mentioned. I wouldn't like to go back, but I've got a few things maybe that we need to address, Chair. the issue of the presentation. I think we need to look at it. We from provinces, and we feel these presentations are too summarized. You know, they need to go into detail. Maybe we should get annexures in them that speak to certain things, specific things. If you say that 17 municipalities in Mpumalanga that are under administration, for an example, we need to know who are those. So we need to keep track in all the things that are being said by the department. Let's look at the issue of those presentations when they come in. And the deputy minister mentioned the issue that without municipalities, there's no government, and without municipalities, without land. I'm glad he mentioned that. As the FF, since we champion that this government will make sure that municipalities get land, so that when they want to build schools, they should be having land to build those schools. Chairperson, I would like the committee to also look in the issue of the CWPs when the department comes back in this committee. We really need to look at this issue of the CWPs. The minister mentioned the issue in the municipalities. Actually, in fact, I didn't hear the minister say anything about the municipalities that are owing us. What's going to happen to them, and how is the department going to be in that space and situated that we resolve the issue of the municipalities that are on ESCOM. The second thing that we need to, the minister mentioned that they are going to identify youths that will be responsible for the maintenance of the municipalities. But would like to bring to the attention of the department that we've got TVETs in this country. And there's an issue, one of the issues that we raise even with the Department of Employment and Labor, that they have to look in those TVETs. You know, why is the department not utilizing the students in the TVETs? That will also assist the issue of employment and other things. So I'd like the department to look at that, Minister. Another thing that I would like to mention on it, Minister, is the issue. We know for a fact that there's a lot of municipalities, it has been mentioned now and again, there's a lot of municipalities that had a fruitless, wasteful expenditure. But the deputy minister said nothing, the department has said nothing. No action has been taken with the accounting officers. And we need that report. Such and such a municipality had a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This is what has happened. So and so has been suspended, or there's what, there's a case. Would like the committee to have that, so that we also take a collective decision with regard to those things. And I would like to emphasize on this of these presentations when they come here. We don't have to rush, Chairperson. We are a committee. We've got all the time. That is why we are here. So we feel there's a presentation that is a rush. You know, we can't come here, and that is why the DDG was taking advantage that every time he was mentioning people are new. No one is new here. We are all capable of doing what is expected of us. Let's stop this thing, Department, of every time we'll mention the issue, the president in the State of the Nation. The president did what he was supposed to do, State of the Nation. Now it's time for action. Tell us where, when, and all those things, then we move. If things are not happening, then we can be able to say, but can you please explain to the committee what is the problem? Because we'll hear this thing, the president said, the State of the Nation, until next year. Come the next year, and then we still saying the president said in the State of the Nation. So let's try to move away. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mutamai, Honorable Mteta, the last one, Honorable Shiva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The cabuel are most of them. Deputy Minister, I have a very serious problem with this department. Most of municipalities have a problem, is serious. I'm questioning the issue of the pool tools. I'm going to work on the Mercedes-Benz for what about the Mercedes in March 2020. Sometimes it's a lead service and it's good. Good Lemon will come and address us because you are going to address the Committee of Parliament. Then you just come and tell us, you can arrange the quality one thing. When you look to the municipality that I'm representing, especially in Ekurhuleni, there's lots of potholes. Maroro can create a Mercedes. Why would you say create a Mercedes at this moment? Your people are not working. When you look on the issue and to the military veterans, when you get to the municipalities, ngaru from Tswane, ofita Gauteng, ofita Soweto, Osama Hall, ofita Metsimaholo, military veterans are not working. I don't know Mercedes or by creator for them, military veterans. Youth, you can just try to link here, but it's between the Nyaopo all over, because I want to be they are busy with. How to show them that we are building houses? I want to say, but you are not to say, Lord, they are in Kiwa. Time is, well, there is a municipality. Le Fati, Laro, now, and the municipality. They don't even give to the people because Le Paloku are hiding. But you are talking about 90 billion. Auto Shevela, Ndautarunadianka, the Deputy Minister. The train all over. I think as the chair we must visit these people. Because some of these people, they will simply come here, but only get some train or Rayo. Then reverend, they have seen something right. We must visit Russia and our race too. But we are not a Serisa moon. There are a lot of people, Baba Serisa. No, you must understand when we are here, we are the committee. We are the portfolio committee. We are not the EFF or the ANC or whatever. Yeah. Here we are the committee representing you. And when you come here and make a lip service, we will come there. And when we get there, or you say to and meet you, you will jump. This is a serious committee that you must respect it. You don't simply come here. Or whatever you do the minister, you support the statement minister because he don't appreciate it. When you look, Minister Modi, apartheid government. Those are our houses. I sitting to the apartheid government. They are Duka, Bona Kwako Varona, Bandela Kimisi and Pula. All these municipalities, how shall we some of the parks? Have you seen the parks that they don't worry, who they didn't drop on me or Banabama Hua? Baba Pala also. That on our Utonero Kiriti, Latinus, I want to work in the park. Look at you, Kisalin. I think, Minister, you must look on those things. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Nikiho, fellow must remember that this is the discussion around issues of local government, not the other departments like human settlement and all that. We're focusing on the APP. And the budget as presented by the three entities. The care for all members as they continue to engage. Mr. Mteta.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just on the CWP, Chair. Is there any plan now that it is being developed in trying to address this major problem that is facing the department on this program? It's a good program, but the way it's being centralized, I know now and that it leads to a point where some of the things on the ground level we find it difficult to be accounted to. As a result, the department is took it to a disclaimer. And a clear program this time around to say, how are we going to fix this matter? I'm happy on the traditional affairs, the
Makosi wanted in Biso. Maybe can I suggest one topic that must be discussed in that Biso? The issue of the roles of the traditional leaders in the current dispensation in a democratic country. Maybe if they can discuss that as well, we will appreciate while they're discussing many other issues, the issue of land and other. If they can please ask them to discuss this one as well. The Lisa, I really appreciate your presentation. It's a good presentation too. But I think now we must move, or maybe first give us a criteria that you are using in identifying when, especially your program two, when you identify your program two. What criteria that you are using in those municipalities? Because some of these municipalities also share with us the list, copy us the list, that these are the municipalities that here we've supported them through, we supported them in asset management, we on the technical scale, all those provision that you will give it to this municipality. We will appreciate if you can give us a list so that we can check, because some of these municipalities that get such support, it's not visible on the ground. And what is your role after your support when municipality don't comply with this? You pay a lot of billion, you put technical support, you put the, everything there. But what happens if they don't comply? Those municipalities that get supported in the programs that you are giving them. I can see you have developed and you have supported a lot of them in different skill training and all this. And this time around, I will appreciate maybe if you can classify them in terms of the province, because we also represent province here. In KwaZulu Natal, these are the programs that in under program two, these are the municipality that has been supported. In Northern Cape, these are the programs, these are the so that we can do some oversight and see in terms of the your planning. We will appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable
Thank you, Chairperson. I see we're running out of time, but be that as it may, Chair, I'll try not to repeat some of the questions that have already been addressed. But maybe just emphasize additions to some of the issues. Chair, I think the Deputy Minister, we are the National Council of Provinces, and our interests are, or we constitutionally mandated to ensure that provincial interests are taken into account. And I think if the Department had actually brought information in relation to which municipalities are being addressed under the various issues, we would have engaged the department in a different manner. But be that as it may, I'm sure, Chair, as we go forward, the department would come back to us with that information. Chair, I think in terms of the turnaround for municipalities or support that is given to municipalities, while the department does support municipalities, there's also the Department of Treasury nationally as well as in provinces that provide support. And I just want to know, at what level is there some kind of integration in terms of the type of support that is given to municipalities? In terms of, also in terms of the presentation, your broad comments about it, but I would have imagined, Deputy Minister, only 18 out of 257 municipalities received a clean audit. You know that there are three provinces that did not receive any clean audit. And I would have thought, even in this presentation, there would have been some sort of mention in terms of what kind of interventions the department would have embarked on to ensure that these municipalities' issues are being addressed. Chair, I think with MIG funding, Chair, we do have a lot of rural municipalities that do not have capacity to utilize these funds. And these funds, if funds are not utilized, they are taken back. But yet, the need for services are still there. And maybe the presentation, if it did identify those municipalities, it would have assisted us to see what kind of support was being given to these municipalities. Chair, and then I just want to raise two other issues that which are more provincial, of a provincial focus. The one is around the Municipal Demarcation Board, which is an entity of the department. I know while there was no presentation on it, but Deputy Minister, you are aware that demarcation issues in Limpopo have created other problems, especially at the moment we're sitting with issues in Vuan, which are also a threat to service delivery in the area. While I understand that the certain section in the community which tends to move the goalposts every time government tries to make interventions, but we need to get to a point where the issues on the ground are resolved so that service delivery can take place in a much more safer manner. Chair, my other issue relates more to small town regeneration. While in the program, the department speaks about the development of a strategy around this and implementation, which is likely to only take place in the fourth quarter. Chair, I just want to raise the issue around Sikukuni, where I'm sure the Deputy Minister is aware, we have a district office of government outside of the district. It sits in another district. And clearly, I mean, if there's some kind of move of that district office into JFIRST, which is where the municipal district office occurs, in terms of regenerating a small town, I'm sure we would go to great lengths to do that. But Chair, I'm not sure whether this strategy is also considering JFIRST as a small emerging town or not. If not, I want to know, in terms of this issue, what is the focus of the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Taking into consideration the bigger picture, the regression with local municipalities since 2003 has reached to the disaster level now. If we look at the process that's going on, and you would know that what's happening in Northwest, that it's not a protest anymore, it's wars. It's burning towns down to the ground. It's doing excessive damage to infrastructure. Just recently in Ottersdal, a library of about 60 million rand was totally destroyed along with other infrastructure. If we look at the failure of the turnaround strategy of the Chairman Pacheco, if we look at the back-to-basics failure that we was in municipalities, that there's absolute no effects that has had, then I wonder about the programs and the plans that was presented to us here this morning. If we just look at the mandate of our municipalities and our district municipalities, none of them functions within their mandate. None of them even functions in their constitutional obligation of delivering services to people. If we look at the interventions in 8 years, some of these the municipalities in Northwest are for the third time under administration. It has done nothing. Interventions come and go, and afterwards there's no handover report. There's absolute no institutional value that is laid down by these administrators. In fact, more money is gone. And it's costing the province and it's costing the municipality. Now, of the 17 municipalities under administration, Provincial Treasury of Northwest have requested National Treasury to withhold the transfer of equitable share to 9 of these municipalities. In 9 of these municipalities, it is so bad that they cannot even pump water. If you look at a company like Clover in Lichtenburg, they are losing 1 million rand per day. They have to stop production levels because there's no water available. If we then further look to the accountability and the failure thereof, if we look at the AG, he who comes and looks at the financial disposition of a municipality, of how many money is spent and the supporting documents available, what is the measure that we look at to see if service delivery takes place? Because service delivery in this stage is not even, it's totally absent in most of these municipalities. This caused that ordinary people can't do life. They cannot get vehicles licensed, they cannot get vehicle registrations, driver's licenses, nothing of that can happen. They don't have water, they don't have sanitation, they don't have street lights, potholes, everything is at the order of the day. But most of all, most of these people sit without water. They sit without water in temperatures this past January of 52 degrees within a makuku or a shack, as they call it. And with not a drop of water. And then we expect people to not go there. Then we expect the police to go in with rubber bullets and contain them if they don't have water. If they don't have water, they don't have food because they cannot cook. I request that we as this committee and that the department look into the things that's needed. And the things that many of you have said here today is the dysfunctionality because of people being deployed that cannot do their job. There's too much fraud and corruption going on. There's too much chocho and manga business going on. And that has to stop. If we do not stop there, people are going to die in these places and more and more people will suffer due to poverty and no jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, all honorable members, for your inputs, reflections, and questions. I hand over to the Deputy Minister for responses and the chief.
Thank you, Chairperson. You had already started an engagement when the first presentation by D. Cock came in. He said a mouthful of the state of municipality as a going concern, and that the APP itself is not reflecting and indicating what is it that we are going to be doing. In my opening remarks, we did indicate that this is a transitional period that we are in from fifth administration with all its obligations that it has had, but we also have the sixth administration that we need to be incorporating. And I did indicate that we will then, within a month, coming back to Parliament to present what we call a five-year strategic plan. That then tells you what is it that we are going to do in the next 5 years, taking on board the mandate of the sixth administration, but also the issues that are there in society that, and particularly at municipality level, that will be doing. So in that way, it will then be indicated. For now, we're just dealing with the remaining 8 months between now, August, and then the 1st of March, what is it that we're going to be doing? Hence, when you look at the report, it's just saying in the annual performance plan, the things that we can do now are the following. But then the strategic plan then will be the new program then that gets presented, and it, I think it will be more indicative. It will then tell you what is it that we're going to be doing to change the face of municipality and ensure that we respond to the needs of the people, we respond to the challenges that are facing our own people, particularly turning the municipalities around. So the intervention in the municipality is not the first time, neither is it going to be the last time until you get it right. There are seven interventions that have happened since the advent of the municipality system in South Africa. It's 19 years old. The first was what you called Operation Masakane, viability. You all remember it. It came, it served its people, it was able to change and have an impact when it did, and things regressed over after, thinking that we have arrived. And another project was then designed, Project Consolidate, try and consolidate the good that has happened during Operation Masakane, and then deal with the new challenges that are now beginning to emerge, and then so that we could then see municipalities responding to their constitutional mandate and their mandate, legislative mandate. Then the third intervention was what we call CIN Amand, meaning time to deliver now. The systems, the institutions have been built. Now it's about time now that we now begin to see services going to the people. Then the fourth was the fifth-year strategic agenda, which is also an intervention to the municipalities. If we can do things this way and this differently, we'll be optimally beginning to see what we call an ideal municipality, services being delivered and municipality focusing on its mandate. Again, the fifth one came, local government turnaround strategy, we call it. And I think you all remember it. But still is about to intervene on things that were not happening correctly. Then in 2014, when we realized that the financial accountability was on the fall and things were not happening, we came up with another intervention called Operation Clean Audit. You all remember it? And then now, then we then came up with what we call Back to Basics, which is just a renaming from a program which was called Local Government Improvement Programs, all geared at service delivery, but Back to Basics also saying, can municipalities just do the right thing within their own mandate, then we will get there. So what we don't have control over is who are the people who come into the municipalities. That COGSA does not choose. It is the political parties that choose candidates. It's the political parties that send people to work and serve at that particular level. We don't have control of that. We work with whoever has been sent by political parties. And some of the people that are sent there, obviously, it leaves much to be desired. The deployment of the people that are sent to the local government is where the problem is. Who then appoints management? It's not us. It is the very people that you have sent in to go and represent the people at the municipality level. Who then decides who gets appointed? And quite a number of wrong appointments have happened. So if you go to the Back to Basics, its intervention is to deal with that issue. Phase one, can you begin to put people and their concerns first? Once you come in as elected representatives in the municipality, your mandate is put the people first and then deal with their concerns. That's the mandate. Secondly, what Back to Basics says, support the delivery of municipal services to the right quality and to the right standards. So that across any municipalities, when you walk or you drive through or you move around, the quality of the services must be of the same, and also the standard must be the same across small towns, big towns, and rural areas. The third is to promoting good governance, transparency, and accountability. These particular representatives that are there, they ought to do this in order to then make municipalities to be functional. The fourth is ensuring sound financial management and accounting so that we don't have Auditor General always coming in, finding this audit or queries and so forth. And indeed, you could see, I mean, when you read the Auditor General's report 2017-2018, things are not happening properly. I was just telling the team before we came here, I had a meeting with the minister over the weekend, and my daughter said, can I address the minister? I said, no, you go as an auditor. And then he says, minister, can you now, in your term, go in there and do an audit, schools audit in all municipalities? You are going to be shocked what you get. You're going to be shocked what you get. The people that are there are unqualified. People that in the finance sections, it's worse. People who do not know finances. And how, what do you expect to get as a proper and good audit? He says even when we come as external auditors, sometimes they chase us away. And I think the Auditor General has spoken about that too, where he had to be escorted by the police to go and just do a normal audit. And he said there will be internal audit. When you look at the skills of the internal audit people, they are not skilled even to do anything. Filing system is bad, invoices are not there, evidence is not found, and therefore, Minister, could you do an audit of all the people that are employed in the municipalities? And this goal of building institutional resilience and administrative capability, but part of the back to basics, it was saying that employ the right people with the requisite right skills on the right position. So in that way, you will then begin to achieve what you really want to see ideally as a functional municipality that delivers services, that enable the environment for economic development, investors to come in because all the infrastructure will be in place. Yes, you are right. I didn't say that municipalities employ are there to create jobs, but they are there to enable the environment for the creation of the jobs. Attract investors. I even gave an example of factories that they will not come in if you do not have a proper infrastructure. The legal case in Mpumalanga municipality, as you know that, there's a poultry company that is there, and when you go to the shops, Checkers or ShopRite, whoever, you want goldfish, they are the producers of goldfish. But they say their business is suffering now because there was a shortage of water. Municipality was not able to provide water. Now, as a result, production line went down, and then they were unable to produce enough for the market. And what then happens, the American chickens are taking space. And then the local producer is suffering simply because of a service that has been failed on them by the municipality. And it's just but one example. Nestle has been approaching the ministry saying that we are moving, we are going to Johannesburg, we are going to Cape Town, we are going to Port Elizabeth because, or Devon, because in your small municipalities, there's a lot of disruption, either electricity, security supply is faulty, water supply is faulty, and then jobs will then migrate out of the area into the big cities, and people will follow the opportunities, and the poor cities have not planned well to absorb many people coming into them, and when people don't get space, they invade land, they build informal settlements because they need shelter, which is a fundamental right of everybody. But because that plan of the movement is not part of the plan, it's forced by conditions, and then the migration that is faster than development, then people find themselves living in the shanty. And it's not a South African phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon. All cities are now beginning to receive internal migrants simply because of the opportunities that people find. So let's then also begin to look at building economy in the rural area. So therefore, that is what that's the prefacing of our response that is an APP. However, I can see that members will want to get certain presentations that are agenda-focused on, one, what is it that we're going to be doing to turn the local government around now that we know what is happening. All other interventions might have succeeded to a point, but there's a lot of regression that has taken place. The minister is engaging on that particular issue. At an appropriate time, he'll then be coming because he's still also responding to the issues to say what is it. And the strategic plan that we're going to be developing will then have a section that is saying, going forward, this is what. And if it's very short time, that the turnaround at the time, not 5 years, it should be a year to 2 years, we should have the municipality corrected and in a particular posture. And it has been sent to the officials, the time to relax is over now. We are here to work and respond to the needs of the people. And he gave the example of how she went into Home Affairs and turned it from being what it was into a model of what it is today. And he says it is doable and it can be done. But the only challenge is that the people I found there, I didn't choose them, unfortunately. Unlike in Home Affairs, you choose who you employ. But then in the local government, it's the parties that serve the representatives. So if I fail, don't blame me. Blame yourselves as political parties on the nature and the capability and the capacity of the people that you send. So if those people do not do what they are supposed to be doing, obviously that will be there. But the the consequence management on those who have employed at the provincial level, in the local government, in the our own national department, there definitely we've got a responsibility for consequence management. And people, if they don't perform, they must go. People that perform, there must be consequential management. And that's what is already indicating. And these are just indicators, Chair, but as you know that we only came into office now in June, and then we are here in July presenting the budget and the plans, and that is why I was saying it's a transitional report for now, but then the one that is going to come just after a month, somewhere in August, end of August, September, based on the permission of Parliament, which we had indicated to Speaker, will be bringing the five-year plans that now speaks to the challenges and speaks to the new mandate. I'll therefore just leave certain areas to the official to deal with all the technical issues, and I'll come back on the actual points that are official on each member. It was just more a preamble of our intentions to change things in local government.
Can we just do that, 2 minutes each, just respond to the questions as raised by the honourable members, and I do take your point that we need to break all these presentations into pieces and specifically invite the department to come and deal with those specific issues. Yes, 2 minutes. Cooperative governance.
Thank you, Chairperson. Without wasting your valuable time, I think my deputy minister has covered me on a number of things. The department is operating on two levels. There's an APP, which is annual performance plan. There's an operational plan, which is how things will be done in detail. And as you have alluded earlier on, we are prepared to come back to you and give you all the details of how these matters will be addressed. And I must appreciate the fact that the questions being raised and the matters being raised are of great concern. And I can assure you that you did say it earlier on, that our APP is not in detail, but our operational plans are really in detail. All the matter that has been raised, you have taken note of each and everything, and we'll make sure that when we come back to you, we'll respond to each and every matter in clear detail. Thank you.
Misa?
No, thanks, Chair. Also to add to what Mr. Faber has indicated, Chair, the details, we have them, we will share with the committee in terms of the municipalities, the name of those municipalities, we have them, and the type of support that has been provided, and the support that will be provided now, we will provide that, and also in terms of the criteria, we have them, it's not just a MESA criteria. It's a criteria that we jointly with the Back to Basics team and COPTA and National Treasurer set and agreed upon in terms of which municipalities must be prioritized for what. And out of that, we then have 87 municipalities that were then prioritized looking into a range of challenges, service delivery challenges, infrastructure, the spending on MIG, the financial management challenges, and including the audit outcomes. So we have that, is the criteria that we are using. And in terms of what about the other seven municipalities, the question raised by Honorable Mola, we have got, this is a new program, the capacity development program, which we are piloting in two provinces, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. The intention is to then get lessons learned from there. If there are improvements that need to be made, we make those improvements, and we roll it out to other provinces as well. And the issue of which was raised by Honorable Zandamela, the issue of TVET.
Do a global summary about all the issues and all the perspective like the DPP did, saying with the acknowledgement that we are going to call Nisa and you come along.
Okay.
We spend all the time with you.
Now we'll do that.
That's what then all these issues.
This was another specific question about TVET. Yeah, because I wanted to confirm that we actually work with TVET committees. So the support that we are doing around the technical support in terms of skills development, we do it with TVET colleges.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, two issues that were raised, one by Honorable Kwai about the issue of disparities from province to province in terms of how different kingships are being treated. I think the issue is that when it comes to norms and standards and what we can do at national level, I think how the kingships get recognized, for example, that gets done at the national level, the roles and functions defined in the Traditional Leadership Framework Act be done at national level. But when it comes to resourcing, that's where they need to begin to see these disparities, because it's a provincial function, it's a concurrent function, and provinces then provide according to decisions that they made at provincial level. What we are trying to do at national level is to come up with what we call a handbook on tools of trade for traditional leaders. We've started that work. We are consulting now, we're engaging with the National House of Traditional Leaders, engaging with provinces to see what kind of framework we can come up with at a national level. But ultimately, actual implementation will be at provincial level, and it is possible that in some provinces they will still continue to make efficient. Certainly at the level of salaries, it's standardized because this is determined nationally. But the resourcing issue is the one that is the challenge around the cars they get, the size of the policies, and so on and so on. But the work that we are beginning to do now around the tools of trade that we're already consulting on, it will be a step in the right direction, but subject to very intensive consultations that will need to take place. Honorable Mthethwa raised the issue about a discussion at the Imbizo of traditional leaders about the role of traditional leaders in the current dispensation. Again, in the current legislation, the roles are defined there, but the issue might be should they be reduced a bit. At the summit, they will discuss this, particularly in relation to their role when it comes to land management, because they have raised concerns about SPLUMA, that it excludes them, but in communal areas, they have a role that they are playing. So how do we then define our roles as the institution of traditional leadership in relation to that particular aspect? But just to add finally, Chair, that there is also a discussion that is already taking place. There's a task team between us and the National House on the powers and functions of traditional leaders. There's work that is being done there. There will be consultations that will ensue as well at a later stage around that area. We can engage with the committee at a later stage about this. Thank you.
But the issue, let me thank the members for the issues that they've raised. We are not undermining them. We have taken notes, deliberate notes indeed, so that when we come back, we can then share with you where good work has happened or is happening. We'll share with you where there are still challenges, and we'll obviously be seeking assistance, particularly on the oversight powers that we have. The Equitable Share and the MIG Fund and the municipal support is what goes to the municipalities. All in all, over 90 billion rand. We receive, we pass. We receive, we pass. And the issue, therefore, is who do we pass it to? And I think you've already clearly said the services we don't see physically, the townships are dating, the spillages are all over, service delivery is poor. Where is this money going? And I think that is the question that the members are asking. CWP, Minister will be presenting a new model. It's going to be reviewed, and over a period of months will then be coming back to Parliament around it. On self-determination and Section 235 of the Constitution, indeed that gave rise to that establishment. And so far, luckily for the new South Africa that we're building, that is the only area we might have to re-engage on the issue that we're building one common South Africa. On the issues of the state of finances in the municipalities, I think it requires a presentation to the portfolio committee. On the issue of the participatory democracy, representative democracy vis-a-vis viable or non-viable municipalities, the formula engagement and the constitution says we must have this. Now, if you are going to have one big global municipality, what do you do with the representativity? What do you do with the participatory? It's a matter for a discussion that I think I've just identified. There are 40 municipalities that are under 139 section. So we might then have to come and share with you Well, next week. You want the best winners now.
In terms of the program, next week you are here to come and deal with 139.
Yeah. Okay.
40.
This of these municipalities and why they are where they are. And how many times have we intervened? Is it working or not working? Because it has happened in the past. Maybe it's happening again and so forth. But it's 40, the number, so that we live with it. I agree with the members that when we present to the NCOP, you must design in our presentation and style of presentation your mandate, because we are here representing provinces. So don't present like you're presenting to the National Assembly. And I think it's a very useful point that has been raised. We are taking note of it. And then the issue of the including an agenda on the role of the traditional leaders in the dispensation will take care of that particular issue. And all of us, we want to see municipalities functioning, and I think that is an idea. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister and your team, and thank you very much, Members of Parliament. I think this was a very useful, robust discussion. And all of us, I haven't heard of any person who says there are no problems and challenges at municipal level, and that this situation has got to be arrested. And my view is that it can only be arrested if we join hands in partnership, that we play our role of oversight, of scrutiny, of ensuring that we hold you accountable for what you do. Sometimes when we criticize, we don't criticize because we are distracted, but because we accept that there are problems and the situation cannot be normal. It cannot be business as usual when our country is going down. It is for all of us to defend it, to ensure that we put it on the right man. The last point is that there were three presentations here, and something that we must appreciate is that traditional affairs and MISA have got unqualified reports, and they need to reject that because we want clean reports. We don't want audit findings with some findings as such. We want to ensure that they are clean reports. And now we focus on cooperative governance so that we succeed. With those words, I think I must thank you once more for having attended this meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Now somebody be here doing the legal opinion, the department doesn't have. I'm going to go to the hospital.